This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We may or may not hear from Chris O'Brien. Supposedly, he's got his cell phone working well, but he hasn't gotten his internet yet. He's, of course, contacted the Men in Black, the Galaxy Protectors, to see if they would help him. Joshua Cutchin, who's our guest today, was telling me their stories now. They're going to have another Man in Black movie. What have you heard?
Yes, I just saw this, that Sony is looking to do sort of a sidequel. So not necessarily a sequel or a reboot or a prequel, but something set in the Men in Black universe. I think that the details that I read were that they are eyeing a setting in Great Britain, which would be an interesting take, with Chris Hemsworth and a as-yet undesignated female black co-star agent. We'll see. You know, the Men in Black series has been, I think, diminishing returns for a little while now, so we'll see what happens, how much more there is to scrape at the bottom of that barrel.
I actually liked the number three, the one with Josh Brolin in it. That was actually pretty entertaining. I think that was maybe my favorite of them all.
Well, Josh Brolin's casting as a young Tommy Lee Jones is pretty inspired. So, yeah, I definitely agree that there were some highlights to that.
Now, think about it here. We have Chris Hemsworth, who is known for actually two roles now. The brief appearance as Captain Kirk's father in the reboot version of Star Trek. Thor, which some people like to call Thud if they don't like the character. And now if he becomes a Man in Black.
You know, I'm excited to see Chris Hemsworth flex his comedy chops whenever he gets a chance to do that. I mean, the Thor 3, he really exhibited a really good sense of timing. And in what few smaller comedic roles he's had, like the Ghostbusters reboot, which I thought overall was not very good, but I thought he was a bright spot in that. And also the most recent National Lampoon's Vacation film, he was sort of a bright spot in that as well. He's got a good sense of timing, so he might be able to pull it off. We'll see.
Yes, I've seen him do things. He is surprisingly funny. And you don't expect it because he plays opposite that kind of character normally. So as a Man in Black, sure, what the heck?
Stranger things have happened, that's for sure.
Some people say, would he play James Bond? But I think that's totally against the character.
Yeah, I'm not much for him as James Bond. I'm more along the lines of rooting for someone like the gentleman who plays Rollo in the Vikings series. I can't remember the actor's name, but I think he would be a good choice. Or the gentleman who plays Ross Poldark in the BBC Poldark series, whose name is also escaping me. Yeah, I think that there's some good British actors who would make a good choice. People have been, you know, sort of kicking around the idea. Aidan Turner, that's the Poldark actor. People have been kicking around the idea of an Idris Elba James Bond, which I love the idea. He's my first choice if this conversation had started in earnest about 15 years ago, but I'm afraid that Hollywood just isn't going to cast that old of a James Bond these days. But, you know, who knows?
I will mention one person that will surprise you because you've probably never heard of him. He's a British actor named Adam Rayner, and he played in a TV show called Tyrant, where he's part of the family of this Arabic, shall we say, despots. And he becomes, at the end of the series, a despot himself. And you see him with a beard. You say, this guy cannot possibly be James Bond. Except he also did a TV version of The Saint, playing the Simon Templar character. And you see him without the beard, and he seems to carry it off. And remember, Roger Moore did The Saint before he became James Bond.
Well, and also, you know, I remember that there was a lot of backlash when Daniel Craig was cast because, oh, no, he's blonde and he doesn't look like James Bond. And I would argue he's, you know, one of my favorite Bonds that have been out there.
And he's too short.
True. True. Yeah, a lot of people have this idea of what James Bond should be, and it's kind of interesting because in a lot of ways he's just a cipher, unless you really want to go back to the old Ian Fleming novels, which they really haven't had much fidelity to for a while, besides just pilfering names.
Well, so much for James Bond. I have no idea why we're getting into this. And we had you on 2016.
Well, James Bond is sort of a man in black, isn't he?
James Bond, he's a man in tux.
Man in tux, yeah.
But, you know, that's pretty, pretty unusual character. But he was more of a raw character in the book than he was in the movies. And we think of Sean Connery, kind of a hybrid, could be cruel, but also very suave. And then we have a character like Roger Moore, who wouldn't even walk sometimes without using a stunt double because they didn't like the way he walked. He also didn't like guns.
I didn't know either of those.
So I can't say he was an empty suit, but he just wasn't physically James Bond. He played the Saint pretty well, but not somebody with that dash of cruelty. But what do I know? Timothy Dalton? I don't know. He wasn't bad.
Maybe they should go with something other than the typical British. Like, maybe they should do something like get someone like Jet Li in there. You know, go Kung Fu.
Oh, please. You don't understand here. This is the quintessential British spy. And you can't have him being played by somebody who lives in Asia. Okay?
Well, I'm sure he could play a British citizen, you know, just break the mold or make it. Wasn't there some rumor that there was supposed to be a female version?
Jane Bond, maybe. Yeah, that's one of those things that's been kicked around for a while. I think that, you know, I would like to see something a little bit different with the franchise at some point. It's shaking it up in some direction. And if it's casting an Asian British James Bond or, you know, a black British James Bond, you know, in a lot of ways, I'm all for it.
You know, let's get away from James Bond because we really don't care about that. We care about weird foods from elves and space people. A little bit anyway. And we'll talk about your next book, Joshua. And as you probably have recognized, if you recognize voices from people, we have J. Randall Murphy as our guest co-host. So let's go back to kind of reacquaint our listeners to odors and foods and all this other stuff.
Yeah, well, I have the, perhaps in hindsight, not bright, because your life definitely takes a different turn when you make a decision to write books like this. But I had the bright idea, the light bulb moment, back in 2014, that there were some similarities between fairy folklore and the UFO phenomena, that weren't being addressed. You know, obviously works like Passport to Magonia and people like Kiel, had talked about some of these similarities before, but there was one specific area that people had really denied, and that was gifting of food, the food and drink offerings of fairies and aliens, and how those sort of overlap and correspond. And, you know, has anybody ever done a survey and analysis of this? And when I, you know, became very apparent that no one had, I sort of sat back as someone who's interested in the unexplained and said, okay, well, somebody's gonna write this book. And I waited a couple weeks, and I waited a couple months, and I said, yeah, nobody's going to write this book. So I took it upon myself as part of my exit strategy from my day job. Part of it was sort of writing, and part of it was also going all in and being a full-time musician. And I went ahead and put together my first book, A Trojan Feast, The Food and Drink Offerings of Aliens, Fairies, and Sasquatch, which is the first book of its kind to really look at these disparate areas and to sort of find the similarities between not only how these foods are given, but the types of food that are given and why this remains a persistent motif that you'll find even through, you know, the abduction era. If you look at sort of the UFO lore, food offerings happened, you know, some during the contactee era. You know, Orfeo Angelucci is probably the most famous of those, who received this golden nectar that gave him these strange psychedelic almost visions. But it takes little imagination to see how some of the force feeding and some of the injections in modern abduction lore sort of have that same quality as well.
Let's get some more of this. Joshua Cutchin, guest co-host is J. Randall Murphy. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items, and entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Hello, my name is Marjorie Wildcraft. I'm the founder of the Grow Network, which is an online community of people who produce their own food and medicine. We are really into backyard self-reliance. If you want this lifestyle, I suggest your first step be to learn some basic home medicine. Just the other day, my 18-year-old son came to me and said, "Mama, I got a sore throat. Can you fix me up?" And I said, "Sure, Ryan," and in about 24 hours, he was better. The best home medicine for you to start out with is garlic. It's an amazing natural antibiotic, and I can show you how to use garlic to handle ear infections, sore throats, colds, and flus. As a way for you to get to know a little bit more about me and the Grow Network, I've written up an easy introduction on how to use garlic. It's at gcnwellness.com. Now, the station manager told me that I needed to say the URL at least twice, even though it feels kind of weird. But if you're interested in backyard self-reliance, you are one of us. Go to www.gcnwellness.com and let's connect up.
The answer to being in control of your own healthcare is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my Sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck or back or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
See why our homegrown small business at sunny-bay.com has tried to help people just like you. Get your Sunny Bay heating pads at sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com. Or call 253-678-1361. For hot and cold therapy, sunny-bay.com.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original and most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So Chris O'Brien is waiting for internet. I tried to contact him on his mobile phone, and that didn't seem to work so well. Joshua Cutchin, who's author of The Brimstone Deceit from 2016. We're going to cover some of it again and bring it up to date. And he's got a new book coming out this summer. He won't give up on it. Now, I wanted to mention an email that I got from a regular listener who said, quote, Gene, I enjoy the PowerCast, but I wish you would have more shows about other aspects of the paranormal other than UFOs. At least for me, I'm tired of hearing about that topic nearly every week. Well, we haven't been covering it nearly every week lately. I mean, last week we had Red Pill Junkie, of course, and he was relating UFOs to other paranormal mysteries, and that's part of the issue that we're even discussing right now. Can you say all these paranormal thingies are totally different? In which case, you can put UFOs here, Bigfoot here, ghosts over here, etc., etc. Or do they have resemblances? Are they connected in some way? So a sense here, can we separate the various masters of this phenomena instead of being lots of separate things, but, you know, they're all related in some way. But the question here I have here is, and this kind of just brings us back, why odors? Why think of sulfur, the odor of burnt sulfur that somehow heralds some kind of weird experience?
Well, you know, I think that part of the reason that the UFO gets so much attention is because it does seem in a lot of ways to be a bit of a uniting motif in a lot of these different things. I mean, you'll see, you mentioned this sort of ad nauseum with your appearances with Red Pill Junkie, but you do have similarities between the near-death experience and what could be called ghost phenomena and UFOs. You have similarities, you have events where Sasquatch has been seen in proximity to or during a UFO flap. I think that if you are being intellectually honest, you have to admit that there is some sort of connective tissue between all these different things, if you're assuming that there is an objective reality to all these different things. I don't think that all of Fortiana or the unexplained necessarily deserves equal attention, because some of it's kind of, I think, silly, and some of it's the product of the internet age. But if you look at the storied traditions, if these are not all the same thing that we're looking at, the Venn diagrams overlap a good deal. And that's really nowhere better represented than in the smell of sulfur. So that was my 2016 book, The Brimstone Deceit, which I was sort of amazed that no one had taken the time to put forth an entire book on just paranormal smells. I mean, there had been a chapter here and there and a study here and there and a Flying Saucer review article here and there and a MUFON journal article here and there, but nobody had ever really given the long-form treatment. The book primarily looks at UFO smells, Bigfoot slash Sasquatch smells, and ghost smells, not just sulfur, as the title implies, but all sorts of smells. And there's a lot of overlap, again, between all these. But one of the connecting things is this persistent smell of brimstone or sulfur. And you find this, obviously, in, like, not only in, you know, cases of demonic possession and those sort of cases, but in just mundane ghost cases, you'll find this. You'll find sulfurous smells, specifically hydrogen sulfide, in a lot of Sasquatch cases, and it's one of the more common UFO sighting odors as well. And as you go down, you'll see that it's common in what few fairy accounts mention a smell, you can sort of find similarities there as well. Men in Black, Black-Eyed Kids, you'll see this sort of motif of sulfur, of decay, of entropy across all these different phenomena. That to me, I thought was pretty fascinating connective clue as to what might be going on here. Again, I'm not sure what is going on, but I'm just trying to see where these little bits and pieces of what seem to be disparate phenomena overlap.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story, which is apropos to nothing, but that's what people say about me all the time. He's apropos to nothing. And that is, when I was a kid, maybe 8 or 10 years old, I went through a period where I kept smelling sulfur or something like sulfur, that kind of foul odor. And it seemed to persist when I was walking in the street mostly with my family. And after a few months, it disappeared. I also had weird dreams at the time, recurring dreams where I see this large, dark object speeding towards me and then just kind of overwhelming me, and I wake up in a sweat, kind of a recurring nightmare. And I remember them as happening around the same time. And that stopped. And it never happened again.
Well, part of what you have to sort of break down is sort of exactly what you were smelling, because sulfur in its own pure state actually is odorless. It only starts to smell if you actually ignite it, which creates sulfur dioxide, or it's in the presence of hydrogen and creates hydrogen sulfide and decay. So is this more of a fireworks smell or a rotten egg smell?
Probably closer to rotten eggs, and I've never liked eggs.
Well, you know, whenever you have, you know, biological material decaying in the absence of oxygen, you're going to get this hydrogen sulfide odor, which is why, you know, it's inside a rotten egg. It smells that way. And that really is, hydrogen sulfide is the most common of the two compounds that are smelled, although, you know, again, both are smelled. But, you know, there are numerous reasons for that. I mean, you can't deny the fact that, you know, if as I recall, you grew up in Brooklyn, Bronx, Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's entirely possible that it could have been venting gas from a sewer. I mean, that's, again, you have decay in the absence of oxygen under the water of, you know, human waste, and that's a very common smell in those settings. It could be the smell of, you know, of trash or dumpsters, or, you know, barring something like that, that's a mundane explanation. There is a recognized phenomena in science called phantosmia, where people smell smells that aren't there. Now, unfortunately, amongst the ghost hunter groups, people have said that phantosmia is the smelling of a smell that doesn't have a source. And they say, oh, phantosmia, if you smell something, that means a ghost. Well, that's not exactly what phantosmia is describing. Phantosmia is a psychological condition wherein one person, for whatever reason, smells something that no one else can detect. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that that might, you know, That sort of condition might come and go.
Well, it, like I said, came at the same time I had these recurring nightmares and left the same time. I don't recall the odor being specific to a specific street. Remember, I was living in an area with tenement houses, small apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In the Brownsville section. The only thing I can say now is my parents probably paid $50 a month rent for this two-bedroom home, way back when, thousands of years ago. It has since been rebuilt according to Google Earth. And it looks new. It looks like it was the same place built possibly in the 1930s or something. And I imagine now if you tried to rent the place, assuming it's still four families or four units, it would cost you $3,000 a month minimum to show you how things are. Hey, we got more to come, trying to separate what Gene's odors are, and don't say what you think you're going to say. More to come. Joshua Cutchin with Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
You haven't experienced yogurt until you've tried Amasi, embodying health and flavor in a true whole milk, green-fed dairy beverage. Every sip pays homage to our old-world cows and the ancient culturing methods their milk benefits from. With over 30 probiotics, Amasi's undeniably nutritious, refined, cultured sensation bolsters your health and awakens your passion for dairy. Amasi's so good, and you need to try it. Contact your Youngevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to gcnteam.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Hello, my name is Marjorie Wildcraft. I'm the founder of The Grow Network, which is an online community of people who produce their own food and medicine. We are really into backyard self-reliance. If you want this lifestyle, I suggest your first step be to learn some basic home medicine. Just the other day, my 18-year-old son came to me and said, "Mama, I got a sore throat. Can you fix me up?" And I said, "Sure, Ryan," and in about 24 hours, he was better. The best home medicine for you to start out with is garlic. It's an amazing natural antibiotic, and I can show you how to use garlic to handle ear infections, sore throats, colds, and flus. As a way for you to get to know a little bit more about me and the Grow Network, I've written up an easy introduction on how to use garlic. It's at gcnwellness.com. Now, the station manager told me that I needed to say the URL at least twice, even though it feels kind of weird. But if you're interested in backyard self-reliance, you are one of us. Go to www.gcnwellness.com and let's connect up.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Warning! If you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-959-5759. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-959-5759. That's 1-800-959-5759. 1-800-959-5759.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
So we're exploring strange odors, phenomena that seems to relate to many possible events, not just UFOs, with Joshua Cutchin, author of The Brimstone Deceit, and another book he'll be mentioning shortly. I want to remind you also about that other radio show called After the Paracast, where you never know what's going to happen next, and we don't either. And you get that, the version of this show, free of network ads and more, if you subscribe to the Paracast Plus. Somebody on YouTube said, gee, I can't afford any more luxuries. And I reminded him, it's $1.49 a week. That's it. Or $4.99 a month, etc., etc. Go to plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. And we're looking here at different kinds of odors. Now, in looking at odors, do you also look at strange foods in connection with paranormal events?
Odor and taste are so intimately connected, you have to sort of address that. You know, I feel like the subject got tackled a good deal with a Trojan Feast, so I didn't spend too much time in the second book on that, although it is interesting how we perceive flavors when we are told certain things. So there's actually been some studies that have been done wherein if you are blindfolded and someone tells you that you're drinking an orange drink and you're handed a cherry drink, your immediate first reaction, your first tiny sip, the tip of the tongue, will be that it is actually an orange drink instead of a cherry drink, or, you know, vice versa. So a lot of times we use context clues to sort of help us guide these more, I don't want to say liminal senses, but it's kind of that. They're not very definitive. They're subject to interpretation. A similar study presented people with Parmesan cheese under their nose if they're blindfolded. If they're told that someone was sick, they feel like it's vomit and they pull back. If you tell someone that you're cooking Italian food tonight. They're going to be excited about it. I saw a magician who had a similar video pop up on Facebook where he was blinding people and telling them that he was going to burn them with a match, a lit match. And what he would do is he had them blindfolded. He lit the match so that they could hear it, and then he took an ice cube and pressed it to their arm, and people would draw back within seconds because their context was that this was actually, you know, a burning sensation when it was actually a pretty innocuous freezing sensation.
So the point here is that the visual clue is very much part of the taste experience.
Yeah, I mean, the taste and the smell experience. On the other hand, you know, you had a lot of philosophers from, you know, the 17th and 18th centuries who felt that smell was beyond reproach because it's sort of like the old adages of the nose knows and a rose by any other name. This idea that smell is impartial and isn't as open to influence by, you know, visual stimuli. Although I think that, you know, modern olfactory science, modern taste science proves that that's not quite the case. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've expected one flavor and I've bitten into something and I've gotten a completely different flavor and it sort of freaked me out. And I think those ideas of expectation and, you know, other data, I think that has a very strong statement to say about how we interpret, you know, anomalous events.
Exactly. So maybe what we have in some cases then is some sort of cultural association that activates the imagination of a person who's aware of it, who then sees something out of the corner of their eye that is then interpreted as whatever that thing in their imagination might be. So like, you know, maybe someone's walking down the street, there's some sewer gas or there's some smell from something, some industrial thing off, and then that makes them think, oh my God, demons, and then, you know, some dog runs by in the shadows and it's, oh, it's a demon coming.
Right. And it's cultural priming. And, you know, this has sort of been hijacked, I feel like, by the, not to get too critical right off the bat, but I feel like this has sort of been hijacked by the ufological establishment by looking backwards and saying, look at these, you know, these primitive people. They saw, you know, these extraterrestrials from the stars and they interpreted them as gods and fairies. And I think that it's just as fair to flip that on its head in the other direction and say, you know, what if we're interpreting these much more anomalous, much more, for lack of a better term, spiritual phenomena? Not spiritual in the, you know, reductive Christian dichotomy of good and evil, but rather in the sense of an ecosystem of spirits that might exist. What if we are interpreting that through a ufological lens? I don't think that there's a definitive answer either way, really, but I think that too much attention is given to reinterpreting events in the past through a ufological lens without giving credence to the idea that we're interpreting things in the modern era through our UFO lens when actually it's something completely different.
Well, then again, what we're getting is, on one hand, There's a direction to this. As we move forwards and people become better educated and we start to think of what might be a reasonable explanation for these fantastic experiences, we're moving away from the magic and towards something that we could conceivably make rational sense of. So I think that there is a direction to this, and I think that it's reasonable for us to be going in that direction as opposed to the other way, which is kind of backwards.
So I listened to your conversation with Red Pill Junkie, which was a really great conversation. I feel like I'm completely open to the idea of extraterrestrials in a sort of materialist framework, but at the same time, I don't think that has really gotten us anywhere substantial in quite some time. And this is actually part of what my reframing the debate essay was about, which was about, you know, this idea that we're already ceding ground. We're already giving up ground to the non-materialist interpretation of reality. I mean, by merit of the fact that most nuts and bolts ufologists will say telepathy is something that happens in these encounters, well, then you might as well practically throw all of materialism out the window because there's no mechanism that can fit into the materialist paradigm that accounts for that. And if you're going to throw out materialism, then it opens up a lot of additional possibilities. And we have to remember that the materialist viewpoint is something that has been popular in a very, very small amount of human history. And that even today, in the West, we sort of live in this insular bubble that scientism and materialism are the only games at play. But we are still sort of a small sliver of the population of the Earth that interprets a lot of the world in a much more sort of animistic, much more spiritual sort of dimension. Again, this isn't to say that by throwing out materialism, you're throwing out science. To the contrary, it's just saying that this current understanding of the fact that things have to be physical is not always the best, most parsimonious way to explain certain phenomena, especially when they fly in the face, the data flies in the face of that sort of ethos.
But then we're getting kind of into a dualism discussion where, okay, on one hand, you've got a physicalist point of view, and there's a number of different ways of looking at that. You'd probably class me as a physicalist in that I believe that there's a physical explanation in the sense that there are rules to the universe that apply to the things that are material. So physical and material aren't necessarily the same, but there are rules that come into play. And when we identify those, we can make and measure things that take place. And we can do that to some extent with mental phenomena. But the other side of that is the mental phenomena. So we're either talking about something objectively real with a physical explanation, as in, let's say, what is a mental phenomena composed of, or we can say, well, what is the experience of the mental phenomena? So which are we talking about? Are we talking about something that is purely a construct of someone's mind, or are we talking about something that's objectively real?
Well, I think that there are a couple of things to sort of pull apart there. And I agree with you. Like we're using the best toolbox that we have. And that's what science is it is the best toolbox that we have. But sometimes I wonder if certain ideas in physics are less rules and more along the lines of guidelines.
We've got Joshua Cutchin, author of books about strange odors, strange foods. I can always change my diet. That doesn't hurt. Do that sometimes. J. Randall Murphy is our guest co-host. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting, providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com. Virtual care anywhere.
Does the current world crisis in North Korea or our domestic crisis right here in America concern you? Well, I know it concerns me. My friends over at Legacy Food Storage have solutions in the event there's the inevitable. What's the inevitable? Civil unrest, a run on your local grocery store. And here's my question to you. If this happens, how do you feed your children? How do you feed your grandchildren? Legacy Food Storage has the solutions. In fact, they can help you implement a simple plan to take care of your needs in the event of the inevitable. By calling them right now, I have authorized them to give you a special 20% discount at checkout by simply using GCN. Call 888-543-7345 or visit them at legacyfoodstorage.com. That's 888-543-7345 or visiting them at legacyfoodstorage.com. Make sure you use GCN at checkout for an incredible 20% discount. Don't be a victim. Take control of your life now.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
We have to put him up there with a lot of the others. Our top person right now is Red Pill Junkie, and we've always had good performance when he's in the mood. From Nick Redfern, you're way up there, I'll tell you. All right, guys, we'll continue here looking about the one thing that is most interesting about this, and this goes back to a letter from one of our really loyal listeners who says, I'm just tired of hearing about UFOs. But then suddenly, if it's all related. But you see, there's also an ego involved here. We like to think that what we know now must be superior than what we knew then. So whatever we thought of this kind of phenomena back 300 years ago or in 1897 or whatever, what we know now is the truth.
Yeah, I mean, it's a constantly moving target. Now, that isn't to say that we can't, to paraphrase a public figure from a while back, go to war with the army we have rather than the army that we want. But I still think that we should be cautious of how progress is viewed in terms of scientific understanding. I think the point that I was trying to elaborate on and before the break, which I didn't really do a good job of, is I think that sometimes what we consider the laws and rules of the universe might be more flexible than we account for. I mean, you might say that it's sort of a law that if I rest my pencil on my desk, it's going to stay there. But as the admittedly reductive point is often made in, as high school physics classes, if somehow the atoms in one object could align with the atoms of another object in a precise way, because there's so much, empty space in an object between atoms that it could conceivably fall through it. So I think that this idea that the universe functions like a clock is a little bit reductive for me. And the idea that if it can't happen in a laboratory, it's not a thing is something that I'm sure that all the listeners of the Paracast will empathize with. I mean, you don't measure tides in a wash basin, and you don't measure a quarterback's performance on a treadmill. You just don't. I think that one of the things that is tearing down the materials establishment in a good scientific, well-reasoned way is some of the psi phenomena research that you see. The Dean Radins, the Rupert Sheldrakes, the Daryl Bims, the guy who was at University of Virginia who did reincarnation research, whose name is escaping me right now. But these are the sort of people that I think are really sort of trying to help us to re-understand that something that is a completely interiorized phenomena, like our consciousness, like our mind rather than our brain, can have a physical effect on the world. I mean, if you look at, you know, sort of the Aleister Crowley definition of magic, the very act of picking up your pencil is an act of magic in the real world because it was a thought that you had that you willed into reality. So in that sense, you know, every time we go into the cinema, we're seeing magic. This is an idea that someone has had that they have made, they have manifest as a physical objective presentation.
That seems to be kind of more an interpretive thing on a subjective level. I mean, one could just as easily say it's an intellectual accomplishment. There is a history to film. There is a science to film. And there's a way that it works, and it has to work a certain way, or it just doesn't work. You can't just magically make it work. You have to have a projector. You've got to have light. You've got to have all the materials in place. Otherwise, it just won't work. I think the guy you were thinking of was maybe Stevenson.
Yes, Ian Stevenson, exactly. Yeah, thank you.
Right. I looked into those claims as far as I could just with the information available on the internet, and some of that's pretty interesting, but there are still gaps where there needs to be a leap in logic made from the assumption that there's some memory that seems to correspond to those of a historical figure and saying that that person who has those memories is now the reincarnation or is that person in some, say, child's body. There's some real philosophical and critical thinking gaps there.
I would agree with that. I think that that is by far of the people that I mentioned the most anecdotal, because you have to have a working concept, a working, you know, framework through which to interpret these reincarnated birthmarks and whatnot. So yeah, I will totally agree with that. I think that his work is compelling and interesting on an anecdotal level. But if you look at some of the people who are operating with, you know, pretty strict scientific rigor and are meeting that seven sigma threshold, I think that's sort of a different ballgame there.
There's some interesting stuff, and I wouldn't discourage the research, but I do think that we need to maybe step up our skeptometers a little bit and make sure that when we hear these claims, that we do look into the background as much as possible. Like, we have the near-death experiences, and we have people who claim that, well, they were clinically dead, and yet they remember things that happened in operating theaters. And those are fine anecdotes, but there are explanations for that sort of thing. And there is one study where they've taken a device that displays messages, put it up out of the view of the patients in an operating theater, precisely for this experiment, in a cardiac operating suite. Hundreds and hundreds of patients, none of them were able to say what that message was. So there's right. Really no evidence for the actual taking place of somebody rising out of their body and experiencing something from a remote distance.
There is no laboratory controlled evidence, or the laboratory controlled evidence is weaker. Yes, I will agree with that. You do have a veridical confirmation of some people who have seen or experienced events in completely separate rooms that I find are really compelling. But again, we're talking about the anecdotal stuff here. I find it interesting when you have somebody, well, I mean, again, he's somebody that I think is really in a lot of ways is doing a great job. Someone like a Rupert Sheldrake, who is really doing his level best to conduct experiments with scientific rigor and is finding that, you know, his famous PET telepathy work, where despite randomizing return times, despite randomizing types of cars, distances, etc., dogs tend to rush and wait by a window or a door when their owners start the return journey. I mean, if you look at that research, which has been attacked quite a bit, but attacked in some pretty dishonest ways, I think that it's compelling that there's something there. And again, like that, what does this mean? Does it mean that we are all playing out a script that we've all been given? You know, is the idea of fate? Is the idea of is someone seeing something in a separate room of the hospital? Is that because they were near death and they levitated out of their body, or their, you know, remote viewing prior to the event, you know, the remote viewing into the future, or any number of things? My thing is that if any one of these things are possible, coupled with, you know, a lot of the talk, this sort of consciousness research, coupled with quantum physics research, which I am in no way capable of discussing, because I think that I'm going to leave that up to the physicists.
No, I want to throw one thing out here. The words quantum physics are sometimes used as a dodge. Hey, it's totally some new scientific thingy or other. We'll call it quantum physics, and then they can just drop the subject because they have no idea what they're talking about.
That's part of the reason that I don't like to talk about it, because that's not really in my wheelhouse. But I think that if any one of these things has a shred of truth, then it completely brings materialism down like a house of cards.
How do you figure that? See, I don't see a disconnect there. Let's suppose that we have something like we're able to, let's discuss telepathy. All we're talking about there is some sort of information transfer. We know our brains are transceivers, and perhaps what we're dealing with is some sort of as of yet undiscovered method, physical method, that we just don't know what it is. Like magnetism, for example, we really still don't know what that is. We talk about virtual photons and that sort of thing. And yet we've got now Maxwell's equations. We're able to make use of electromagnetism to run our world in ways that pretty much account for our level of modern technology. We might not be able to explain it at the most fundamental level, but that doesn't mean that there's nothing physical going on.
Materialism holds that the fundamental constant of reality is literally matter, that human consciousness is an illusory byproduct, it's an epiphenomena of the brain. This is the key point. Just because materialism is falsified doesn't mean that the scientific method is falsified, doesn't mean that there aren't certain things that we can measure. It just means that there can be an influence of something non-physical and internalized like human consciousness. There is no room for telepathy in a materialist construct. There was a philosopher physicist, Mario Bunge, that said that, you know, precognition violates the principle of antecedence. Psychokinesis violates the conservation of energy. Telepathy and precognition are incompatible.
More to come. Joshua Cutchin, J. Randall Murphy, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Tired of being censored by Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Patreon? Well, now you don't have to be. OneWay.com is the free speech and human-friendly social network built just for you. Stop feeding the beast. Every post you make on those evil, anti-human, anti-American perverted sites helps them destroy our families, our country, and our souls. Join OneWay today and take back your liberty. Your free speech alternative is waiting for you at OneWay.com. OneWay.com.